1.49 at McDonald's gets you a mini Oreo McFlurry. 1.49 on a big night out gets you...
Sorry, no trainers.
McDonald's save a menu. Actually get your money's worth. From 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary. Fees apply to delivery. Subject to availability.
That's what I thought.
You're listening to Peak to Pit. Allie Peak, TJ Pittenger coming to you live on this Wednesday before Thanksgiving. Lots and lots of interesting stuff to discuss today. But first of all, TJ, the really important stuff. Who is hosting your Thanksgiving? Are you having to do multiple?
I am. No,
you
no.
You are. Look at you. This means you're finally an adult, by the way.
So we did this like, I think like 3 or 4 years in a row. Definitely when we moved into our house. So 2017, 2018, 2019. And then last year we didn't host because we were just tired.
Okay.
But now that we're in the new house.
Ready to do it.
I don't want to drive around. Also.
I feel that.
Fried turkey is much better than the way that any other of my family members make turkey, and nobody else will do it. Mm-hmm. You know, and so like, you're right. I just have to be the adult and, you know, make this. Right, so, right. It's totally on me. It's totally fried turkey in this house, but we've done a good job of delegating like all the other things to other family members so that I think Kara's only making like one or two things. And one of those is a bourbon chocolate pecan pie that I'm very excited about.
Tell her to make two.
Now that
we're so close to each other.
Actually, she is making two. So if you'd like to come over on Friday, we're saving one for Friday. Well, there's a bunch of college football on and stuff. So you just have to beat Ben over here because he's in North Carolina. He's like, make an extra one. So
anyway. He's in North Carolina. I was going to say he's next door. It's really difficult. I mean, we're close.
Oh, yeah. Like, you've got like several hours on him there. Perfect. So excited for that. What are you guys doing? You hosting? Are you going?
We are actually going to my mom's this Thanksgiving, which my mom hasn't hosted in a while. We always usually host Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is our smaller family holiday because my sister Gabby.
300 people there.
Right. Like it's 40 instead of 60. But, one of my sisters multiple of my sisters go to their in-laws for Thanksgiving. And so it's a lot smaller because of that. We're going to my mom's. Everybody claimed all the dishes that I always make, this Thanksgiving. So I'm not making any of them and I'm just going to sit back when they're not as good because these are the dishes that I've made for a million years. I don't even know how this happened. My job is mashed potatoes. So I have like the easiest and pie, which is fine too.
I love mashed potatoes so much and I will only let Kara or her mom make that because some people in our family like screw up the mashed potatoes and like, there's nothing worse than like soupy or
gummy.
Oh, just
yeah.
Like,
no, I mean, listen.
Take a little effort, get a KitchenAid mixer, stop being poor, exactly. And like, let's go.
I mean, the KitchenAid mixer is probably my most used wedding gift. This thing's been going for 10 years strong. It's amazing.
All the cakes, all the pies, all the desserts.
Oh my gosh.
And mashed potatoes, the most amazing mashed potatoes with no effort.
Yes. Right. Well, I mean, there's effort, but it's worth the effort, right? And mashed potatoes are easy compared to most of the stuff that you make on Thanksgiving. So we'll see how everyone else's turns out. I'm not hopeful. I'm actually going to make a few things that we just keep at the house for leftovers for later because I'm not actually confident that I'm going to want anyone's leftovers.
You're terrible.
Usually when we have Thanksgiving in our house, I make everything. Like I'll be like, oh, you want to bring something? How about you bring booze? You want to bring something? Okay, here's a specific pie I would love you to buy. Like, I don't know. You know me. I'm type A. I'm controlling. If you can't speak better than I can... Don't make it. It's not that hard.
I'd like to pull back my invite for you to come over and try this chocolate bourbon pecan pie. I just crapped all over it.
Listen, my children think that Kara is a professional baker. All right. Yeah. So I have full confidence in Kara. They think her job is to make cake balls. So
yeah. Hilarious. So what's your favorite? All right, we'll do this and then we'll actually get to the serious stuff. What's your favorite Thanksgiving side and your favorite Thanksgiving dessert?
My favorite Thanksgiving side is probably green bean casserole, but it can't be made with canned green beans. It's got to be made with fresh green beans. Yeah. I'm a side girl. Like turkey, I eat it, but like I don't have a whole lot of use for turkey. Now, when Eric deep fries it, I prefer that much to everything else. No one has asked Eric to deep fry a turkey this year. Maybe we'll deep fry one for ourselves, but like that's not happening this year. So I'm a side girl. Pie. I'm a big pie person. I'm a big dessert person in general. Pumpkin pie and pecan pie have to be tied for me though as favorite Thanksgiving pies.
So I will go 100% pecan pie.
Yeah.
Over pumpkin pie. I'll eat pumpkin pie. I don't mind it, but it's to me, it's more of a filler.
I like them all.
But as far as sides, I have a tie, but I love mashed potatoes. Don't get me wrong, but it's a tie between my mom makes a really, really good sweet potato casserole.
Okay.
It's amazing. It's more of a dessert than like an actual side, but it's amazing. And then I love broccoli casserole. So
okay. We never have broccoli casserole at our Thanksgiving. So maybe that's something you're going to have to share that recipe with me. I do make a really good sweet potato casserole that is a recipe I got from my aunt a million years ago, but not sure that the person making them this year is following that recipe, but we'll see.
So yeah, I'll just have a plate of leftovers and you can judge your family's food.
Perfect.
Compared
judging,
to what
we have. That's my favorite thing. That's my favorite part about Thanksgiving.
So anyway, all right, a bunch of stuff to get into.
Yeah.
Let's we'll try to make this pretty quick because I got to get out here at 11. So we've got like 25 minutes to get to a whole bunch of things. First of all, the obvious news, Florida State, we'll go with us real quick. Florida State goes on the road and beats BC last week in a game that they were an underdog. It came out really, really strong. And the only thing on the menu is UF's quarterback is what my buddy Phil says while watching this. So we'll certainly get to some news this weekend. Florida State beats BC last week. Again, they were an underdog. They were up fairly big and then let BC come back, held on at the end to get to 5 wins. And what I'll say is, let me toot the moral victory horn before we get into anything else. But if you'd have told me when this team was 0-4 that they were going to go 5-2 over their next 7 games, I mean, I think we all would have said that's pretty crazy. I think we were saying, like, can they get to 3, right? Like, we said they'll beat UMass. They'll probably beat Syracuse.
We were trying to find wins for them at one point in the season looking forward.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is big,
so,
right?
Like,
this is...
I think we always knew that they'd beat UMass, thought they'd beat Syracuse, and then, like, maybe beat one more team, like, down the stretch, right?
Sure.
So I was worried about BC. They are a completely different team with their quarterback, and they had their quarterback back this week, and he made a big difference and was really the reason the game was close at all. But hats off to Florida State, who in no way did I envision them getting to 5 wins this year, obviously with a great chance to get to 6, which we'll talk about here in just a minute, in a game that's essentially a coin flip, according to Vegas. But yeah, hats off to them for kind of turning the season around. I mean, 6-6 or 5-7, which is what they'll end at, isn't necessarily where we wanted to be at the beginning of the year, but
it's a massive turnaround from where they were halfway through the season.
The way that they got there is certainly admirable. Florida drops a close one to South Carolina, 24-23 on the final play of the Missouri, 24-23 on the last play of the game. I was talking with your brother about this. I thought, hats off to Missouri for going for 2 there. I mean, I do think that Florida, through all their struggles, is definitely the more talented team. And when you only have to get 20 yards or so, or in the third overtime, you'll have to get 3 yards each time.
Right.
Florida's running ability. I really thought that Florida would win if it kind of became a battle in overtime, just because they do have so much more talent.
Sure.
Just kind of load up on the run. So hats off to Missouri for going for the 2-point
conversion. It was the right call, but it was ballsy as hell.
Yeah. And it was a wild play. It looked like the quarterback was going down.
Yeah.
Threw it up to a big guy that's wide open, and they end up winning and walking it off. Great play design. You know, I thought that that was really good. Florida, man, Florida had chances in this game to kind of put this away. You know, Missouri could not get anything going in the first half. Both teams struggled offensively, but Florida just, you know, Emory wasn't even terrible. I mean, at 261 yards, they just couldn't finish drives, you know.
Which is, I mean, they've had that problem on and off all season.
Settled for a lot of field goals. You know, here's a 30-yard drive where they had to punt. They had a 66-yard drive where they didn't end up getting anything out of it at the end of the half. And so, that was the one to Copeland. Never mind. That doesn't really count. They threw like 50 yards on that last play to Copeland and got it down to the 9. So that doesn't count as much. It kind of helped the stats. But, yeah, it just couldn't get things going and struggled. And Missouri ends up coming out with the win. Obviously, the big news there, Dan Mullen was let go and parted ways with UF the next morning. I think something that we all kind of figured would happen if Florida was to lose either of their last games is their record falls to 5-6. Thoughts around the game? Thoughts around if you want to start with the game first?
I'll start with the game first. I felt like that game was called so conservatively. I mean, Dan Mullen, you know, can be a conservative play caller. I just didn't understand when your Jimmys and Joes are so much better, not opening the playbook up a little bit more in that game. Interestingly, they did on third down in overtime, but like, why aren't we calling the game like that before we get to overtime? I also personally didn't really understand with, you know, a minute to go, not trying to get into field goal range. To a couple of people who know more about football than me, they seem to understand that decision more than I did. I would like to see us attempt to get down into field goal range. You've got a field goal kicker who was having a great day. You know, if worst case scenario is overtime, I don't really know that I think that that's a huge worst case scenario. I don't know that I think we need to just lob it up there, you know, and risk an interception that's returned, but I would have at least tried to run the ball with Pierce, get within field goal range, see what can happen, and then settle for overtime as opposed to playing for overtime, which is what Florida chose to do. Fully agree with Missouri's going for two. I think that one, it's a ballsy call, but two, it's the right call. Your Jimmys and Joes aren't Florida's Jimmys and Joes. If you're going to get into a back and forth there, you've got to like Florida's chances in that situation. So it was the right call, right? And then
once you get to the third overtime, you're going to have to go play for play for play from the 3-yard line. And so why not just use you're going to have to get into that anyway. So why not just use your very best one, your first one that you're using on the play. And if it's not going to work on the third overtime, you're probably going to lose. So you might as well just run it now.
Well, and here's the thing. If they lost to Florida, then they lost to Florida, right? It's not that big of a deal. If you beat Florida, for them, it's huge. Florida was in a situation where it was a must win. So I think that potentially that play call gets questioned if it's Dan Mullen that makes it a lot more so than if it's Strinkwich that makes it, which.
Well, I will say though, like if the one thing about Missouri there, I think they really needed to win that too, because that gets them bowl eligible.
Yeah.
And they play Arkansas this week, and I think they lose to Arkansas. But if it was Mullen going for two, okay, what are your thoughts on this? Say that Mullen would have gone for two there, like Florida got the ball second, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, you don't go for two.
Right. And when you're first, right.
But I mean, a loss is a loss, and it probably wouldn't have changed what happened on Sunday. But at least you'd say he's being aggressive, right?
So, like, I think he would have been damned if he did, damned if he didn't, right? If he goes for two and unless he gets it, right? If he goes for two and he gets it, then he gets the, you know, he is aggressive. He wants to be here. There is some positives. If he goes for two and he misses it, people are going to question his play calling like they've questioned, you know, throughout the rest of the game. It's a hard, win. That's the only thing that can make people not have questions. I do agree with you though.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Tell me what you agree with me on first.
I did think the game was called very conservatively. I thought that it looked like, I don't know if he was just afraid to go out and get beat or just what the situation was, but it looked like, hey, we're better than Missouri. Like we're more talented. And so we're just not going to make the mistake. We're going to let them make the mistake. We're going to kind of like sit back. I don't know. I agree with you there that it was called very, very conservatively.
Yeah.
And if Florida would have been aggressive, like throwing the ball down the field like they had been against Florida and Alabama and LSU and different teams, I don't know. I just think it would have been turned out a little bit differently.
I'm kind of wondering, so since this game, the news has come out that Emory Jones is doubtful for Saturday's game. He has a lower leg injury. I've heard knee and foot. And there's also some rumors that it's season ending. And by season ending, it would mean if there was a bowl game, you wouldn't be able to play in that, which, you know, Florida, that's a long shot at this moment. But that does make me, in hindsight, wonder if that was some of the conservative play, if it had anything to do with that. We don't know when the injury happened. We haven't been told. So, I mean, in theory, it could have happened in practice on Monday, right? I don't know. But that's an interesting little detail. But what I was going to say, and you would think if you're coaching for your life, it's the opportunity. This is the moment to not be conservative, right? If you're coaching for your job. So it is a little weird for me. Definitely think it's worth noting that Missouri's coach, Drinkwitz, is petty enough to be in the SEC 100%. I don't know who, yep, Phillip's got it. In the press conference after the game, he dressed as, or brought, I guess, a lightsaber or whatever, kind of a play after Florida beat Missouri last year. Dan Mullen came dressed as Darth Vader to the press conference. It was a joke. It was Halloween. But prior, you know, during the game, there was a scuffle on the field that arguably Dan Mullen made worse than it maybe would have been. It started because of a late hit of Missouri. Missouri lit the match, but I definitely think Dan Mullen added some gasoline to that. And Missouri clearly has not forgotten, because I saw listened to a radio interview that Drinkwitz did with a station in Jacksonville. And they asked him about the irony of him ending Dan Mullen's career at Florida by beating him. And he said something to the effect of, my dad's a farmer. There's this old saying, you know, that you reap what you sow. If you sow kindness, you'll reap kindness. If you sow jackass, you'll reap jackass, which, you know, welcome. You do fit in. I was pretty amused by that. But, you know, I think let's talk a little bit about the firing. I don't understand the timing. I'll tell you why. I think that the timing was a poor decision. Even if you're 100% out, you're firing Dan Mullen, you're done with him. This is my question. On Florida staff currently, who, if you take Mullen into consideration, but who gives Florida the best opportunity to beat Florida State? That has the best play calling? Who gives Florida the best opportunity for that? And I think that you'll be very hard pressed to find anyone that's going to argue there's a better play caller on that team than Dan Mullen. Okay. This is why beating Florida State is really important, though. It's important for recruits. It's also important to be bowl eligible, though. And it's not about the bowl game. It's about the 15 extra practices that you get that you do not get if you are not bowl eligible. This team needs 15 extra practices. I feel like it was very short-sighted, especially if Florida's next head coach is going to be who is rumored to be their next head coach, who's coaching in a championship game in a week anyway. So more than likely is not going to be announced before, you know, the game happens on December 4th. I think that was the wrong call. I think you give everything you can to be bowl eligible. And you know what? Maybe it galvanizes the team and they somehow pull off a win against Florida State and then they're bowl eligible. But I think if you're a betting man, your odds are better with Dan Mullen as your head coach for beating Florida State this weekend than they are if he is not. And that doesn't have anything to do with keeping him past that game. But those 15 practices were important.
I don't love getting rid of him before the end of the season, but I definitely see both sides. And I think what UF would be worried about, and again, mm-hmm. I was talking to Scott about this, I think that what UF would be worried about is, what if you go out and beat Florida State by like 20?
Yeah.
Like how awkward is it to fire him then, right? Like after you beat your rival, there was a bounce back. You know, I think it becomes a little tougher to do it.
I think that awkward conversation, that awkward decision is worth those 15 practices that your team
probably
needs.
The one thing about those, and so again, not we agreed at one point in the show, and so we're kind of disagreeing. I do get both sides. I think it's more for, I think I didn't like the firing as much for just the fact that it was senior day.
Yeah.
Like, had relationships. Yeah. The 15 extra practices, though they're important, they're going to happen with seven coaches now on a staff that how many of them are going to be on the next staff. Not that the practices won't. But
so if Florida's next coach doesn't coach his team's bowl game, he can be there. He can evaluate talent.
He won't be. He'll be out on the road recruiting. Like, those things will happen simultaneously. I mean, like, they won't. Like, they'll honor all the contracts through the end of.
Yeah, they'll honor all the contracts. But if you don't think he's there scouting players for the next year. I think that's happened every other time Florida's fired a coach. Like,
I think he's more on the road recruiting. Like, I think he'd be less involved.
He's doing both, but those practices are important.
Yeah, I think I'm not saying they're not important at all. Yeah. They're not as irrelevant as bowl games, but they'd be more important. So, like, I think it's more important right now for Florida State to get bowl eligible than it is for Florida, just for like each program, just because Florida State, needs those extra practices with a coach is going to be like, they can actually continue to install stuff and continue to work on there. And not that Florida can't, but if Florida wins this game this weekend, and then they're coaching for a staff, they're playing for a staff that's not even going to be there next year. Any of your upperclassmen, you know what I'm saying? Like, anybody with a chance to get drafted is opted out immediately. And so then it's just like, well, Emory's hurt, and is AR all the way healthy again? Like, it's just like, who knows kind of where it goes from there. And we saw a lot of Florida players opt out last year in a massive bowl. Like, how many Florida players are going to opt out of the TJ and Allie bowl that's happening, in two weeks, you know? So, I don't love the timing. I do think there's a chance that it does kind of galvanize the players though and kind of make them.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a chance for that.
I think it's going to be tough without three of your coaches. You've got guys calling plays that you're not usually used to. Grantham gone, Mullen gone, offensive line coach gone. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know that Knox is ready to call plays. I think Knox isn't calling plays.
Quarterback's coach is calling plays.
So you have to kind of wonder
who how much
that messes
before,
things up.
So, yeah.
I do think you could see like an increased effort level because I think anytime there's a big change about Missouri,
I feel like we saw, like, honestly, when I was watching Missouri, I missed the first half because I was at my sister's baby shower. But the second half, I just kept thinking, like, damn, this defense does care. They're not particularly great, but they do care. There was effort from players on Saturday. And that was something that was kind of surprising to me and doesn't fit the narrative of what we've heard the last few weeks. And I think that all the tweets that we saw from players when Mullen was let go don't fit the narrative of what we've heard. And I don't necessarily agree with the decision. I would have given him another year, but the decision has been made. So it is what it is. I would have handled how the decision was made differently as well. I guess maybe this is why I'm not Florida's athletic director. But here's the bottom line though. This hire now better be a home run for Strickland, because when you let go of a coach who has three back-to-back-to-back New Year's Six bowl appearances, who had a Heisman finalist last year, who was your offensive coordinator winning a national title in 06 and 08, you better come up with something better than him. And it is, I think you are hard pressed to find very many coaches who are better than Dan Mullen, who are legitimate potential hires for Florida, right? The coaches that we would all name off the top of our heads that we think are better than Dan Mullen are all not leaving their program.
You think you guys can pull Taggart or no?
Shut up.
I would love that hire, to be honest with you.
So, that hire will not happen. But do you see what I'm saying? Out of the legitimate options, I think it's harder to come up with a name that you can say, like, for sure that guy's better than Dan Mullen. So what it is a crapshoot, right? And you better be really happy with the person you gambled on, because this was a risk. I think firing Dan Mullen is a risk. And I understand the argument that if you know this guy's not working, then you should be willing to take the gamble. It's worth the gamble. But I don't know that I think one bad year means that it's not working. So I'm going to be interested. I'm going to be all in on whoever Florida hires, right? Like that's what you do.
I'm sure you'll be lying about them.
You're all in, but I don't love the decision-making to begin with.
Thoughts on Dan Mullen, not pulling a Ron Zook or a Will Muschamp in coaching the final game after he was kind of given that option? Because we've seen coaches.
Yeah, we've seen. Well, that. So Ron Zook was different because Ron Zook was fired in October. So he coached the whole second half of the season.
Yeah, I think Muschamp was a little bit earlier too. I don't think it was the last game. I think it was like two or 3 weeks before. Yeah, it was before.
So I don't know. I see both sides of this, right? I think that best case scenario for UF, if they decided they wanted to part with him, is that he does stay on and coach the Florida State game. I think that would
be great. If you were going to offer him that anyway, if you're
going to offer him, just wait 6 days.
Just wait 6 days. Yeah. Right. Like if you were going to make that offer, just wait 6 days. Well, also, let's back up. I factored in him
not taking it.
Right. If you, you know, just fire me after the other thing.
Yeah. Oh, you want me to get you bowl eligible, but I'm not going to be your coach. Right. Like I'm out. But I can see
I also don't. It also ticks me off more the Grantham and Hevesy thing. Like, if you were going to fire Mullen anyway, why did you make him ruin the – like, I don't even like Mullen that much. Like, I think he's pretty catty on it, you know, but, like, we can have differing opinions. But I don't like what they made him do to his buddies of, like, 20 years. Like, I think that's
supposedly,
crappy. And if I'm Mullen, I wouldn't have coached either because of all that.
Right. I don't give a flying flip about Todd Grantham. But supposedly he and Hevesy are for real behind closed doors – no longer speaking over this happening. Wow, and that's crappy that you had him destroy a relationship that he's had for, you know, the last two decades. If 2 weeks later you were going to fire him anyway, you know, I don't like, and so, and that does, you know, we'd heard all along that they really did want to retain Mullen, but that winning these last two games was imperative for that to happen. And so maybe they did have every intention of keeping him when they had him fire Hevesy and Todd Grantham, but at the very least then I think you should have waited until after the Florida State game. I just feel like there were some missteps that were kind of disrespectful to him on a personal level. And that makes me be able to understand more him not coaching. I hate it for the seniors, right? Those are the people that neither Mullen nor the university cared about when they made these decisions, right? The university could have avoided them not getting to have the coach that they've had the last 4 years by waiting 6 days. Mullen could have chosen to coach him and then he would be there to hug them at senior day. But senior day is emotional for these players. Like I've stood on the field while it happened for two different people, right? This is emotional for these families. They've invested a lot of emotional, you know, a lot of emotion, a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of effort into their child being a player at Florida, into themselves being a player at Florida. And you do want to hug your coach on your home field for the last time. And I don't like that the only people that didn't get a say in it are those seniors. That stinks.
Yeah, no, it is. It's frustrating. And again, I don't know that it's necessary. If you were going to let him stay on to coach anyway.
Right. I don't think 6 days makes a difference. The only way 6 days makes a difference is if those 6 days kept you from missing out on who you wanted for your next coach. But I don't think that's the case.
And he's not, whoever that is not being announced. I mean, I'll eat my words, right. But it's not going to be announced on Thanksgiving Day, on Black Friday, or on Rivalry Saturday. So it doesn't really
matter. Right. So, and if that coach is announced on Sunday, then more than likely that coach is not currently coaching, right? Because team.
So you guys are getting.
Well, that's the thing is that if it's announced on Sunday, that's because Bob Stoops is the hire. If it's announced, or whoever your coach is, doesn't care about coaching the bowl game for their team, right? Or isn't coaching in a conference championship game. Now, there are coaches who they announce it prior to their bowl game because they're going to have an interim for that because they're not playing in the playoffs or whatever else. But you for sure aren't going to announce it before your championship Saturday, which is a week after that. And if the Billy Napier rumors are to be believed, he's coaching in a conference championship game on December 4th, which means the earliest that it's announced is December 5th, right? So, I mean, even if it's a done deal, that's out of respect to him, out of respect to his team that worked to get to their conference championship. So it just, I don't think it needed to be this difficult. But because of the choices the university made, I understand Mullen's choice to not coach in the Florida State game, even though I don't love it, right?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't blame Mullen, and I don't even like, I know you like, I don't even like him, but I don't blame him for not coaching. I think that's, you know, not that I'm good. You know, sure. Like after you made me fire my buddies, you didn't need to do that. If you're going to fire me anyway, look, we've all been, you know,
You fired me. You made me ruin relationships with my friends, but you want me to hang on to help you help the next guy, which is essentially what.
So yeah, I don't love that, but yeah, I mean, I can see it going either way. I think that there are going to be some things schematically that are tough. I agree with you on effort. It doesn't. So the biggest thing to me on effort is that I don't think like if you're a, you have to really, you may have like a lack of effort play here or there, but I really think that like the whole effort thing is more about like guys that are directly involved in a play are not going to have a lack of effort. Like if you're a running back, you're not going to see them just kind of like tiptoe into a hole. If you're an offensive lineman and the ball's coming your way, those guys are going to get off their blocks. If you're a defensive lineman and you're on the strong side, like you're going to react well. It's where's, you know, I think when you have breakdowns in efforts, you almost don't even see them unless you're watching like an all 22, like the next day in the film room, because it's like, if you're a defensive lineman and the run is, it's a toss sweep away from you, are you giving full effort to like try and go catch, run that guy down, right? When 9 times out of 10, you're not going to factor into the play. If you're an offensive lineman and the run's going the other way, are you giving max effort? If you're a wide receiver and it's a run play to the other side, are you giving max blocking up? So like, and those guys aren't even caught on camera, right? Like they are on the all 22, but they're not caught on like the broadcast. So when you say like lack of effort, there probably are some lacks of effort.
Well, happening. There's been some lack of effort on Florida's line. That's either lack of effort or lack of talent, but but it would have to be like really, really lack of talent. And so you can't convince me of that. Like when you are not blocking the right person on the line and you're playing Samford, it's very hard for me to believe that it's a talent issue. It's not, it's an effort issue. I can't tell you how many guys I've watched whiff on both lines the last few weeks. I mean, it's insane, but I hope that they go out and play for themselves, right? Play for each other, play for themselves. This is, it's a rivalry game. Anything can happen. AR will be the starter, which is interesting. We went from him being injured, which they said on, I want to say they said on Sunday that he was day to day, but now he's the starter. So here we are. Emery is doubtful. So fans are going to get what they have wanted, you know, in that aspect.
Do we know if he's 100% yet? Because last week he wasn't. No, we don't know.
We don't know. My assumption, and this is a complete assumption, is that he's not, because when they announced who was taking first team reps, they said it was being split between AR and Del Rio. And I don't know why you split first team reps with the third string guy who hasn't seen the field once this year, unless you're not confident that he's going to be able to complete a game.
Yeah.
You know, because of injury.
This is a good point right here, Dupree. I agree with that. I think that the defense in that Samford game just did not care at all.
There was lack of effort.
And then I think they probably got chewed out in the locker room and come out and played a little, you know, like, hey, you guys want to get embarrassed more than you already are. Yeah. And so,
well, and I mean, you know, I don't know. The attitude just, you know, in that game, the idea that we're going to celebrate individual successes on the field when our defense has given up as many points as they've given up to Samford is just something that rubs me the wrong way. I'm all for you make a touchdown, you get to celebrate, whatever else, but it's got to be the right setting. And I don't know that when you're down or barely beating an FCS school, that like, you know, a team-wide celebration for an interception is appropriate, even if it's something like it's the first time the guy's ever done it. Right.
Yeah. But celebrating the locker room is okay, though.
I mean, that's different, though, private domain, right? This is in front of every fan at the Swamp. This is on TV. That's different to me than celebrating with your teammates behind closed doors.
I get it. The problem, again, is that it got recorded and put out is the biggest issue.
Right.
I don't have a problem with them actually celebrating. But so this weekend's game, Florida is a 2.5-point favorite, basically saying it's a coin flip on a neutral field because they're at home. They're a slight favorite. I will say, you know, it's really tough to predict this because and this is probably what ended up doing Dan Mullen in, but in his last 11 games against power five teams, he was 2-9. Yeah. Those two wins against Tennessee and Vanderbilt this year.
God, isn't it ironic that no matter how bad Florida is, they still beat Tennessee every year?
Man, I'll tell you, they're lucky. I think they're lucky they played Tennessee early. Because, like, if they played Tennessee
every year, every single year for the last decade, I've been like, damn, I'm really glad we played Tennessee early because now they're so much better by the end of the year.
And they'll start out again next year, like 1-3. And right. Then at the end of the year, they'll go on like 6-2 stretch. You know? Yeah. It is tough because they play Florida and they usually play out of conference, which they lost to Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's a good team this year, a ranked team.
Sure.
And they play Florida and they play Bama every year. Like, that's a tough, and usually Georgia. And then after they get through that onslaught, then they can kind of move on and start, you know. I mean, it's like they're battle tested, so they can beat the South. I mean,
yeah.
That said, they get to play the other SEC East teams like Vandy and Missouri and Kentucky, who are not like world beaters by any means. And so they start to pull themselves back out of that, you know, because anything is better than playing Bama and Florida and Georgia, right? So, but Florida, over that stretch where they can't beat anybody Power Five except for, you know, Vandy and Tennessee, Florida just finds different ways to lose.
Well, games, that's the thing, right? Is that it's vast so weird, majority like, of those are one score games, right? They just can't finish. They just can't, they get close. They just can't cross that line. And, but it's a lot of very little things that they're not doing right. Like rare. And
they
honestly,
just don't look like they have any
down to discipline. I think a lot of it, I discipline. And that's actually, this is something I wanted to make sure that we talked about on here. I don't know if you've seen this, but players have made a really vocal push on social media to keep Coach Savage, which is Florida's strength and conditioning coach. And I've been pretty vocal on this show and on social media about how that is a terrible idea. I feel bad for these players that they're not going to get, you know, the one ask that they have. They didn't have a say in this coaching staff switch. They are not going to have a say in the fact that Savage is not going to be retained. But And clearly he's got to be a good guy, right? If all these players are willing to vouch for him, they're not going out there begging for anybody else's job. They're begging for Savage's job. They clearly like him. They think that he is a good coach. I am concerned that they don't realize how much of his job is tied to their on-the-field performance that hasn't been there, right? Yeah. Discipline starts in your strength and conditioning program. Doing all the little things right comes from there. This is the person in charge of your program for 7.5 months. There are very long stretches where he's the only coach that's even allowed to be around them and talk to them. And it's not, that doesn't, he might make them look like Tarzan, right? But they play like Jane.
Yeah, so they're not bullying anybody.
They're not, they're not.
He might be a great guy. But like,
totally. Great guy.
I spoke to a former player who kind of had the same thoughts. Basically said like, oh, to be young and dumb again. Yeah, you like him, but he's a good guy. They like Mullen, I'm sure, for the most part. But like,
if anybody was on both staffs, if any player is there that played for McElwain's staff, Florida had players going to Gainesville Health and Fitness and working out with the trainers there because they felt like, because what was going on at Florida strength room was so bad that the trainer they could find at Gainesville Health and Fitness was doing a better job for them. So if you happen to be in both programs, then Savage is going to be a massive improvement because you essentially had a rent-a-gym going on in Gainesville. So you don't have anything to compare it to, one, but you know, and I think I've seen people mention that Zook kept Rob Glass from Spurrier. He did. Rob Glass was considered the best in the best time. So I think that maybe that's a little bit different. Also, Spurrier still had his hand in the program, which. That was not something that was. Oh, you got me now?
I think you're good.
It's been mentioned that Will Muschamp retained Mickey Marotti. That wasn't a choice. He wasn't given a choice. Urban was given an office in the stadium. Urban thought he was going to dictate who every single one of Muschamp's hires were. You know, Foley was in there. Between Foley and Urban, they did not give Will Muschamp a choice. And the second he got a choice, he switched strength and conditioning coaches. And I think the guys that played during that transition will tell you that they felt like Marotti undermined Muschamp some. And I'm not saying Savage would do that. I'm not saying that that's the type of coach he is or the type of person he is. But he's going to be loyal to Mullen, right? That's the coach that he's worked under for a long time. Even if it's not purposeful, that's where his loyalties lie. But
I think in any kind of regime, in any kind of regime change, whether it's a company or a government or a team, sure. Very rarely do you have holdovers. There are some exceptions like that. Odell Hagans has made it through. Uh-huh. Bobby Staff,
Charlie Strong is another example.
But like that, it doesn't happen. He's also a legendary defensive line coach, and you probably couldn't get any better than him, even if you tried. And you know, Odell's loyal to like Florida State as opposed to if Savage had been there for 15 years, it'd be different, right? Like,
I mean, I think maybe it would be different, but I also think it's worth noting that the strength and conditioning coach from Louisiana Tech, which is if Billy Napier is the guy, right, his strength and conditioning coach that he has there is also associate head coach, which is interesting because that tells you something about the relationship that he has with him, right, and the trust that he puts in him. He's a guy that coached at Alabama for several years, worked under which they always have one of the best strength and conditioning programs in the country. So I would expect if Napier's the coach that he brings many coaches with him, I do expect he would bring his strength and conditioning coach with him. I think that the pedigree that he has having worked under Alabama for a long time means he probably knows what he's doing. And the associate head coach next to his name right now shows that there's a lot of trust in him from Napier. But I feel bad for those players. I know that you want somebody that is familiar to, to see in that locker room. One, it's not going to happen. Two, it shouldn't happen. That's not, there was no toughness on this team physically or mentally this year. That comes from your strength and conditioning coach. There was no discipline on this team this year. If you watch what these sidelines looked like all season, these players messing around, your coach that's known as your get back coach is your strength and conditioning coach, right? He's the person that's supposed to keep order on your sideline. And that really didn't happen either. And so maybe he's really fun, right? But unfortunately, if Florida wants to start winning championships, I think they're probably going to have to start thinking of their coaches as a little less fun. And they're going to have to get a little more serious.
Yeah. No, I agree. So this game this weekend, Florida is a, like we said, 2.5-point favorite. Florida's been so up and down. And what I do like about Florida State is
everything.
Yeah, I don't know. That's not true. I hated them for a long time that we were on here.
You kept that. Is to yourself, that
their effort? Never stops.
Sure.
Like we're not going to go out there and give up. If we played Sanford this week, I can guarantee you we wouldn't go out and give up 42 in the first half. Right. I'm not saying we win or lose, I think we still have some deficiencies and we still struggle in certain places, but I do love the way that Florida State is playing right now.
Yeah.
I think that offensively, they've improved tremendously. I think that defensively, I think that the defensive line that Florida State has right now, the top two players in the country with quarterback pressures this week are both of Florida State's defensive ends. Kieran Thomas had 12 and Jermaine Johnson had 7. I think that if Florida State's defensive line, which I thought Missouri's defensive line did a really good job of this, I think that if Florida State's defensive line can get pressure on Anthony Richardson, who I do not think is a great passer. I know he's a great athlete. He's throwing about 57% completion.
I think he's a good passer. I think he's a bad decision maker.
I mean, I think that all kind of goes into it. If he's under pressure and has to make ill-timed throws, that's when I think Florida State can really kind of take advantage of his youth. He's going to make some good plays. He's going to, potentially great plays at times. And I think that's what you're going to get. I think everything he does good will probably be counteracted with a boneheaded type play where you're like, oh, why did you do that? And that's just what a freshman's going to do. So I do think that Florida State's defensive line is probably the biggest difference in this game. I think that they do really, really well against the run, which is good because Dameon Pierce is really, really good. Maybe he'll get more carries this week.
That'll be interesting to see.
Florida fans, but we've done a really, really good job against traditional running backs this year. I think that where we have struggled has been when a quarterback takes off. And so that is something that worries me with Anthony Richardson in there. But I don't, you know, and knock on wood, I may have to eat these words. I don't know that Anthony Richardson is going to come out and just pass all over us and beat us, because I do think the defensive line gets enough pressure. We got really, really good pressure on BC with four all day. We didn't really have to blitz very often. And so I think that I don't love Florida's offensive line. I think that that can be something that we take advantage of. And if Florida State's keys to winning this game are what they've been all year, get pressure with four, which they've done a very good job of that. Get pressure with four and don't make mistakes. Don't turn the ball over. Don't give Florida short fields. Make them drive to beat you. You know, I probably like Florida State's defense more than I like Missouri's. You know, I probably like Florida State's defense just as much as South Carolina's. And so I think if you can just play bend, don't break, don't give up the big play, I think Florida State will have every chance to win this game. And if it's a late game, if it's a close game late, I like Florida State. Like if it's like a 10-point game and Florida has the lead, I think that Florida just continues to find a way to lose games, right? I don't know if it's a lack of confidence. I don't know, you know. But if we're up by 3 or 4 or 7 in the fourth quarter, I'm not saying it can't go our way. I like Florida State. I like Florida to just find another way to lose. Like, I just think that's kind of their MO right now. So certainly things like turnovers or Florida State not being able to get pressure or Anthony Richardson making some highlight plays could go in Florida's favor. But I think we end up winning this game really close. Like, I don't think anybody blows anybody out in this one. I think it's a battle to the fourth quarter. But I do think that Florida State's defensive line is just a little bit too much. I don't, you know, nothing on Florida's defense worries me all that much. It's just, can Florida State kind of do what they want to do offensively? And I think that
do you think Florida State has a better offense than Missouri does?
I think that Florida State's offense is more balanced than Missouri's, where Missouri is really just like run the ball every single play. And Florida State has really done a good job the last couple of weeks of throwing the ball around. I think that Jordan Travis had like 250 yards passing, which was his season high against BC. He threw the ball 34 times, which was I'll look it up real quick to make sure that I'm not lying on this, but that was his most pass attempts for the season.
Yeah.
Yes. 34. And did a pretty good job. 3 touchdowns, no picks, 59% completion percentage. You know, the week before against Miami, he had a 70% completion percentage with 274 yards. And so as the games have gone on, you know, it's definitely been a climb up. His first game against Notre Dame, he had 130. Then against Wake, he had 107. He got injured in that game, only was in there for 6 passes. Then he had 130, then 140, then 170. Miami was 274, and then BC 251. So a little step back, but I think that he's progressing as a passer. And we're still doing a good job of running the ball. So I think that our offense is probably a bit more balanced than Missouri's. Missouri probably doesn't have the offensive line. I don't know as much about Missouri's offensive line, so it'd be tough for me to tell you. We have a couple of offensive line injuries that could be kind of an issue. But I don't know. I'd say the offense is pretty similar. You know, I don't expect Florida State to put up a crazy ton of points.
But this is why I ask, right? 31. Missouri is bowl eligible. Now, granted, by one more game than Florida State and Florida. But Florida's defense held them to 16 points during regulation, right? Mm-hmm. I honestly like any team's odds of winning a game when they hold a team to 16 points. I have been one of the biggest, one of the hardest people on Florida's defense all year long, right? I think they've been terrible. I've not been a fan of Florida's defense. I thought that Florida's defense did a great job on Saturday overall. And honestly, Missouri didn't even get their running game going until very, very late in the game.
Yeah,
Florida did a great job containing the run for 3 whole quarters. So if Florida's defense can hold Florida State to 16 points in regulation, I like Florida's chances to win. Now, it's not going to be a blowout if Florida wins, right? And granted, most Florida State games aren't. It's a rivalry game. Most of these games are played pretty close. I think these teams are decently evenly matched in terms of the talent that both of them has, maybe even with the talent skewing more towards Florida. Not that having the talent has done a whole lot for Florida this season. But I think if Florida can hold Florida State to 16 points or something similar, they win this game. It's going to be interesting to watch. I think Anthony Richardson, I'm interested to see how he does, right? And the only other game that he started the entire game was against Georgia. And obviously playing against Georgia and playing against Florida State are two completely different worlds. So I'm interested to see, does he look serviceable against a team that's not going to be playing for a national title potentially. No. I think you're right in that he will make mistakes. I think he'll make less mistakes because I think a lot of his mistakes were forced by the best defense in the country. Florida State is not going to be forcing the same. They don't have the ability to force the mistakes that Georgia does. Doesn't mean they won't force mistakes, but they're just not the same defense that Georgia is. And maybe he's learned from some of that. I don't know. I think he can be a decent passer. I think he's not a great decision maker. So his line's got to give him at least some time to make better decisions.
And that's where I like that matchup the most. I mean, because I do, you know, let me look real quick at you guys' schedule. I'd say we probably have you're probably going to disagree here. I think Florida State has the third best defensive line you guys have seen all year. I think Alabama and Georgia are the easy number ones and two. Yes, we have a better defensive line than FAU, USF, Tennessee, Kentucky, Vanderbilt, LSU. I mean, they give up 42 to you guys. I don't think that they're great. South Carolina, Missouri. Stanford as well. I really like our defensive line. And to me, that's the biggest thing is if they can get pressure on Richardson,
If Florida's offensive line is healthy as well, because at the beginning of the year, Florida's offensive line was good. Florida's offensive line handled Alabama's defensive line
much better than I thought they would. Yeah,
pretty well, right? But they were at 100%. Ethan White has had injuries. There's been some other, you know, guys that have missed time. So whether or not the guys that started the game against Alabama are able to start a game against Florida State makes a difference. But if that line plays anywhere close to how they played Alabama, I'm not concerned about Florida State's defensive line. And they have the ability because they've done it.
Interesting stat here. Okay. I want to look at how many times you guys threw the ball. You guys threw the ball 35 times against Georgia, right? So 35 mm-hmm. dropbacks. Mm-hmm. And Georgia had 2 sacks and 7 quarterback hurries, right? Mm-hmm. I like us to have more than QB hurries are such a kind of a vague stack.
Yeah.
I like us to have more than 2 sacks.
Really? You think that you guys will do a better job than Georgia's D-line did?
I thought their sacks were kind of low. I don't know. You know, it's hard to say that we're doing a better job than them because I'd have to go back and really rewatch the game and how many of those, how many of their 33 tackles how many of their 89 tackles were like 1 yard gains, right? Like, so it's hard, but I do think we come away with more sacks. I mean, I'll say we get 2 or more, like without a doubt, you know, like, you know, now if you just look at the Missouri game, you guys had that, you know what I'm saying? So like, that's not to say that we're better than Georgia's D-line or anything else like that, but they kind of, I mean, they didn't terrorize you guys through getting to him and sacks like that. But I mean, if you just look at the Missouri game, Missouri had 2 sacks, you know? So, like, I like us to get that or more. And if we can kind of continue that, they actually got the same number of QB hurries, 7 as well. So, yeah, I like us to be able to get after Richardson pretty good. What do you predict the score is on this?
Like, I think it's
– because you say, like, if you hold Florida State to 16 points – I mean, yes, I agree with that. If you hold any team to 16 points, probably. But I
think it's going to be something like 27-24.
I can see that.
I think it's going to be close regardless of who wins. I mean, I hope that's the case because I feel like if it's a blowout, it's not Florida winning, right?
I have a tough time seeing Florida blowing many people
out right now. I do too. I mean, I don't think between the way that they've played and the being down 3 coaches on your it just doesn't seem, it would be wild if that happened, right? But this is a rivalry game. This means a lot to these players. A lot of the guys, when they look across the line, are going to see guys that they played either with or against in high school, that they've seen on these two fields for several years. This game means a lot to both of these players, or both of these teams. I expect full effort out of both of them. I'm interested to see how it goes with AR, because I think Florida State's a much better match for Florida than Georgia is when he got to start. If he's still making mistakes like that, which are totally possible, I think that maybe fans will have a little bit more of an insight into why he wasn't the starter all season long. I'm interested to see how Damian Pierce is used. Knox has made a few comments this week, essentially to the effect of, we have a great running back room, which is why they alternate, and that'll continue to be the case. Pierce's stats, especially like yards per carry, are so much better than the rest of the running back room. So while I think that there is a talented running back room, I think that's a true statement. I think that there is a most talented guy, and the fact that they're getting, you know, similar numbers of carries as opposed to the best guy in the room getting most of them has always been a weird thing for me. So interesting to see if this coaching staff continues with that decision. You know, this game worries me, right? Florida's got everything against them at this moment. And if they're able to galvanize that and take advantage of that, then awesome. I just think that's a big ask.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at the two programs and you look at the two teams, they have been, we talked about it last week, it was the title of the show. They have been on different trajectories, mm-hmm. right? Florida yeah. has been doing this while Florida State has been doing this. And so, I think that is what has leveled the playing field here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Certainly don't think that Florida State is, talent wise, I don't think that Florida State is, I think that Florida has the edge there. I mean, I don't think anybody would deny yeah. that. But as far as, coaching wise right now, I think it's, you know, having 10 coaches yeah. and a locker room that looks bought in. And I think just the way the teams are playing together, not together. I think that, you know, those things kind of give Florida the edge. I think there's also like the motivation factor, the buy-in factor. Mm-hmm. If things don't go Florida's way early, you know, do they kind of keep their heads in it?
And, sure. And yeah. Do around? You keep fighting?
Your coach is gone. You're making business decisions. You're down 14. Do you just throw your hands up and go? Whereas if it goes the other way, I mean, I do think that if Florida State gets down 14,
they'll keep fighting.
They're not built to come back by any means, but
they're not going to give up. They're not going to not come back because their heart isn't in it. Right. Yeah. So, no, I mean, I think that's all accurate stuff. I never agree with you. So, wow.
So, I think that, I think you're right though. I think it goes down to the, wire and somebody wins this close in the end. Mm-hmm. It honestly would not shock me if we saw a game similar to how FSU has played the last couple, where they get up by a bunch and then Florida roars back and either comes back for the win or, you know, Florida State holds on at the end. But, you know, this is a rivalry game, so anything could happen. I do think with most games, you know, this is the case, but I do think that the I think a turnover battle is huge.
Yeah.
I think if AR makes the mistakes that he made that cost him the game against Georgia, you know, similar to what the mistakes that Emory made against South Carolina, similar to the turnovers that, you know, AR kept Florida in it against LSU, but he also had two turnovers in that LSU game that were massive.
Yeah.
That happens this week. Florida State's in the top 10 of the country in red zone scoring.
Yeah.
That, you know, can't give FSU short fields. Same token, you know, Florida State has done a very good job the last few weeks of taking care of the ball.
Yeah.
So they can't give up turnovers either. I think we have one turnover in each of our last three games. And so have to kind of continue that. All right. You want to do some picks and get out of here?
Yeah, let's do it.
Another rough week for you. This just wasn't your year. So I'll just say that. We both took Ohio State we both took Michigan State last week. Did Michigan State win? They didn't win, but they keep it close. No, they didn't keep it close.
No.
So we both missed that one.
I don't know that there's been a coaching draft stock that tanks faster than Mel Tucker's has. Sheesh. He should have agreed to that LSU job, you know, 2 weeks ago.
We both took Wake, who Clemson beat and covered against. We both I took Oklahoma over Iowa State. I got that one right. We both took Utah to upset Oregon. Actually, they were the favorite, but we both took them. We both took Florida State, and I took Missouri. So you went 3-4 on the week. I went 4-3, making our records 40. I'm 43-36, and you are 30-48. So that can't even be right. So anyway, math is somewhere lost on me. But anyway, it's just not close. 28. No, you're 31. And
so who are we picking this week?
Hold on. This math thing is going to drive me nuts. I'll figure out where I messed up on the math. We are picking Thursday night, Thanksgiving night.
Egg Ole Miss, Bowl!
Ole Miss versus Mississippi State. Ole Miss is ranked in the top 10 and somehow a 1.5-point underdog to unranked Mississippi State. I have no idea here. But I like Mike Leach more than I like Lane. I like Lane Kiffin a lot too. But I like Mike Leach, so give me the Fighting Mike Leaches here.
I'll take Ole Miss. I'm excited for that game, though. That's a fun game. And no, he's not a potential for UF.
One of UF's potential next head coaches. People always complain about, the Thanksgiving Day games. I just saw a tweet that said something like, we are 12 hours away from 12 hours away from Bears and Lions, which everyone will complain about. And 1,000%. Still watch, yeah. Still watch as opposed to spending time with their family. So, but anyway, the game would have been the Thursday night game would have been good. It would have been Bills and Saints, and the Saints were 5-2 until Jameis got hurt. And now the Saints are just pathetic. And so, like all three games tomorrow, like there's just I'm going to watch them, but I'm going to watch college football at night.
Yeah.
Iowa's 1.5-point favorite at Nebraska. I like Iowa here. I think that
I like Iowa too.
The Scott Frost thing is almost done.
Everybody but them thinks that. So
Ohio State is an 8-point favorite at Michigan. I have no faith in Harbaugh to cover this. Give me Ohio State.
None. Give me Ohio State.
Penn State is a 1-point favorite at Michigan State. I kind of like James Franklin here in his big contract extension. So
I'll take Michigan State. You know, it's funny. He had a worse winning percentage than Dan Mullen, and he got a 10-year contract extension, and Dan Mullen got fired. We do things differently in the SEC.
Fire Mullen to find a worse coach. I mean, how different do you want to be? Texas A&M is a 6.5-point favorite at LSU. I really think Texas A&M wins this and wins this big, but – that line worries me. So I like LSU to cover, A&M to win. I think Vegas is trying to pull a fast one here.
Tell me the line again.
6.5.
God, I like LSU too. Give me LSU.
Okay. Oklahoma State is a 4-point favorite at Oklahoma. Man, Oklahoma has been terrible this year, and I have no faith in them, but I think that they're going to end up winning out and going to the playoffs. So give me Oklahoma here.
All right. Give me Oklahoma State.
I like Mike Gundy a lot, though. So I kind of hope you are right. And then the big one, the only one that matters, Florida State is a 2.5-point underdog to Florida. I got Florida State here.
Give me Florida.
One last time.
Why would I change it? You know what? Maybe these guys are going to be pumped up enough. They take senior day seriously. They take this rivalry seriously, and they pull a rabbit out of the hat, right?
I don't know if it's pulling a rabbit out of the hat when you are the betting favorite, but
yeah. But I mean, Vegas has been insane the last several games for Florida. This is actually maybe they're coming down from their bender because this is their most normal line for a Florida game in weeks.
I like Florida State to win this 42-20, by the way. Like, that's going to be
42-20. All right. I say 27-24. You put 27-24.
I got you right there. 42-20. It's in ink. Give me the blowout. I doubt that happens, but I'm going to predict it. So, all right. We'll be back next week to talk about how my team made a bowl and yours didn't. And for you to rate Kara's bourbon chocolate pecan pie and see if it's trash or not. Happy Thanksgiving. Thank you guys for hanging out and watching, listening, and we will see you guys next week.
Go Gators!
Oh, at least we don't have to hear that this last time.